Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Redoubt Lake near Sitka is having a banner year for sockeye. The U.S. Forest Service, which manages the weir at Redoubt, reports almost 22,000 fish have returned to fresh water so far, and the run is not expected to peak for another week or two. Biologists project that the total run this year could reach 80,000. Two commercial seining openings have been held, and more are likely. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Chris Leesburg is the district wildlife biologist in Sitka. He oversees the Redoubt Lake Fertilization Project. Redoubt Lake is an unusual body of water.
The top one-third of the lake is fresh water, and the bottom two-thirds is salt water.
This happens because salt water is denser than fresh water. The technical term for a lake like Redoubt is meromitic. In some meromitic systems, the different layers of water might mix at times, but not so at Redoubt. The freshwater lens at the top of the lake supports the reproductive cycle of the sockeye. The bottom of the lake is a sort of no man's land.
They come back, they spawn, they die. Their carcasses provide this great nutrients. Well, we're losing a lot of it to the bottom of the lake. It gets into this anoxic saltwater environment, and we lose it.
As a result, the Redoubt Lake sockeye system is deceptively small, given the overall size of the lake. Leesburg says the optimum capacity for Redoubt is from 7,000 to 25,000 returning fish. Anything more does not really contribute to larger runs. So this year, with a projected return of 80,000 fish, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has already held two commercial seine openings. Leesburg says commercial fisheries are written into the sockeye management plan created by the state, the Forest Service, and other stakeholders over 10 years ago.
When we get a year where, like a year like this, we have options to open up to either, well, more fish for subsistence fishermen and potentially for commercial fisheries as well. And right now, we're 80,000 plus fish. It's a good year to open up for commercial fishermen.
The subsistence bag limit has also been raised this year to 25 fish per day or 100 per household for the season. Additionally, the Forest Service has, for the second year in a row, issued an emergency order banning dogs from coming ashore within a half mile of the falls. The six Forest Service employees working on the weir have established a strict bear hazing protocol. Loose dogs upset that discipline and can antagonize bears. Leesburg says the weir crew has, over the course of several years, trained the Redoubt bear population to respect air horns.
So when you're out there dip netting or fishing or whatever, and you hear air horns, it's one of two things. It's our crew coming to the weir, so we blow air horns to notify the bears that we're coming to the weir. It is our time to be on the weir. We're trying to be the dominant species out there at that point. I don't want my crew out there working with bears 5-10 yards away, so we have this, you know, blow the air horn. And also, when we're on the weir, and if a bear does pop out, we blow air horns, shoot them in a rump with a rubber slug, and blow the air horns again. And that does the trick.
And the trick for fishermen, says Leesburg, is to take advantage of this pattern.
Bring an air horn with you. The bears out there, they see the air horn and they get scared because they associate it with a rubber slug to the rump, which is not very pleasant for them.
One wild card in the Redoubt formula this year is the massive landslide in May, which blocked the inlet stream, prime spawning ground for sockeye. A 55-acre lake has formed behind the slide. Leesburg says this is not necessarily bad news for fish. He says the downed old-growth timber resembles a huge beaver dam.
There's a lot of fear from people who really don't understand how fish migrate, that beaver dams can create migration barriers. And in a lot of cases, it's not true. In fact, the beaver dams can create great fish habitat, and fish will find their way through them, even big fish. And I think that's going to be the case with this slide.
A Forest Service team will conduct surveys of spawning activity in the lake to confirm this idea. Leesburg says state wildlife troopers have been more active at Redoubt than in past years, and several people have already been cited for failing to obtain their free subsistence permits at the local ADF&G office. He also doesn't think fishermen need to be overly competitive looking for good spots on the falls. Leesburg says he's no expert dip netter by any means, but there are so many fish around that he's managed to get a few anyway. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Five Sitka pitchers combined for a no-hitter on Monday in the Major League Division of the District 2 tournament in Wrangell. Aiden Dumag, Morgan Simic, Jessaran McGraw, Gavin Flores, and Reese Greeno held Petersburg to no hits over six innings. Left fielder Dominic Pachoco saved the no-hitter with diving catch for the last out of the game. Sitka won 13-0. The Sitka All-Stars also decisively beat Ketchikan on Sunday, 12-4, and appeared on their way to dominating the six-team round-robin tournament. Their luck changed, however, midway through Tuesday's game against Juneau. Bryce Kelly launched a grand slam in the first inning, and Sitka added five more runs to take a 9-run lead early in the game. Going into the sixth, the All-Stars held a comfortable lead of 10-4, but it unraveled in the bottom of the inning. Juneau rallied to win 11-10. Sitka takes on Wrangell at 6 p.m. this evening and faces Prince of Wales at 3 p.m. on Thursday. There will be four-team playoff on Saturday and a final on Sunday. The winning team will remain in Wrangell and play the Division I champion for the state title in a five-game series next week. If you need a dose of baseball closer to home, there's Little League action all week in Sitka. The Junior League tournament is underway at Muller Field with games every afternoon. If you listen to Raven Radio in Sitka enough, you'll hear this every day.
Alaska zone weather for Sitka and Port Alexander.
For Sitka and Port Alexander tonight, increasing clouds.
For Sitka and Port Alexander.
For Sitka and Port Alexander. Today, decreasing clouds, highs 64 to 70.
We're going to talk about the and Port Alexander part of that. In an age of Doppler radar and satellite imagery, weather data from the southernmost community of Baranoff Island depends in large part on the most sensitive instruments available anywhere, a pair of human observers. Ed Ronco reports.
The Ludke family home on the waterfront in Port Alexander is just off the boardwalk through a thicket of salmonberry bushes.
You'll watch your step. It's a little steep coming through here.
A big white wooden box sits on a stand just to the left of their back porch.
So this weather station has been here for years.
A metal plate near the top of the box says property of the U.S. Weather Bureau, interference prohibited, or it mostly does. It's so old that U has worn off. Kim Ludke opens the box and switches on a small motor, which helps her and her husband Bill measure the dew point. The Ludkes are paid weather observers, and most of the weather data that comes out of Port Alexander depends on them.
Looks like we have some fog to the south. Vicinity showers to the west.
After a little while, they turn off the motor. Ah, that's better. And we go inside, where Bill Ludke sits at a dimly lit desk next to a pair of barometers. He's punching in a series of letters that mean something to, well, somebody.
All this is in their own secret code, so the Taliban can't figure it out.
Then he reaches for his mouse, clicks, waits patiently for the rural internet to do its thing.
And it's off. It's off into cyberspace for everyone to look at.
Kim and Bill Ludke's position is one of 13 in the entire nation. 11 of the jobs are here in Alaska. Two others are in the mountains of the western lower 48. They're paid by NOAA, which is the umbrella organization over the National Weather Service.
Automated equipment in these remote locations is pretty difficult to install.
Angel Corona is in charge of data acquisition for the National Weather Service's Alaska Region headquarters in Anchorage. He says there are distinct advantages to having human observers.
Automation is just that. It can only sense what the sensors can sense, as opposed to a person who has eyes can see things that are occurring. Like a person can see a thunderstorm off in the distance where an automated piece of equipment cannot.
Among the biggest beneficiaries of those human observations are pilots.
It's its own little microclimate down there for sure.
Mark Hackett is a pilot and director of operations for Harris Air in Sitka. The FAA has live cameras in Port Alexander, but he says human observers are critical for things like wind speed and behavior, stuff no camera can really convey.
Well, it's always great talking to those guys down there, for sure. It's been fun watching them raise their family as their kids come and go, because they're not only observers, they're our passengers too, so we got to take care of them.
Now, the Ludkes don't do this around the clock, but when they are working, they're observing the weather every 2 hours, every single day.
7 observations a day during the summer and 5 observations a day during the winter.
Does it ever get old?
Yes. Yep. Especially on days when you're doing other chores around the property or projects you're working on.
Neither Ludke is a professional meteorologist, but then neither Ludke is preparing a forecast. They're simply observing conditions. Even so, they both had to pass a test in order to get the job, and the only reason they did that is because they inherited the weather station when they bought their home.
And it is confusing sometimes because we get it from fishermen all the time that your observations are very incorrect. I was out in the middle of Chatham Strait, and it was not like what you were describing. And then we have to say that our observation is for right here at the landing strip inside the harbor of Port Alexander. Yeah.
The landing strip is water, of course, and right in front of where we're sitting on the porch. No planes land or take off during our conversation, but as we're finishing the interview, the wind picks up, which leads to the most important question of all. What's happening right now?
A little gust of wind there.
Yep, it's not a squall. It's not strong enough to be a squall, but it is a mild gust.
Reporting from Port Alexander, 60 degrees, 71% relative humidity, patchy fog, occasional showers, I'm Ed Ronco.
Two of Anchorage's reserve fire trucks will find new uses in Southeast. The Anchorage Fire Department says it has sold the two trucks for $1 apiece to volunteer fire departments. The South Tongass Department, south of Ketchikan, will get a 1996 Freightliner. It has an 800-gallon tank and can pump 1,250 gallons per minute. A 1983 Ford truck with 1,250-gallon tank and capable of pumping 450 gallons a minute will now call Hollis home. Hollis on Prince of Wales Island and east of Ketchikan. The Anchorage Department will hand over the trucks during a Thursday ceremony. The South Tongass and Hollis departments will pay to have the trucks shipped to their cities. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Quick look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, mostly cloudy with patchy fog in the morning, highs 64 to 70. You're listening to KCAW Sitka.